How do you measure yourself with other golfers?
By height.
It's a very, very special honor.
I'm Paula Creamer, and you're listening to Golf Talk Live.
Well, we're waiting.
Hi, this is Martin Cove, a.k.a. John Kreese from Cobra Kai, and you're listening to Golf Talk Live.
And welcome to the 19th hole presented by Golf Talk Live. I am Alan DePew. I am joined once again by Christian Nazemus.
How are you?
I am spectacular.
I love
and
that.
Andrew DePew, how are you?
What's going on?
Amazing, but getting better.
You were spectacular. That just made my week. Hearing that you were spectacular. Love it.
Yeah.
Almost as spectacular as Patrick Reed's
rules. Are we going there already?
Yeah, we're going
let's
there.
Let's save that.
All right. We'll save it.
All right. I'm going to jump in and I'm going to revisit a conversation that we had on Thursday, which is PGA show was last week. It was virtual. I logged in. I literally went, I think I clicked through all whopping 281 vendors that were in attendance, I guess would be the word that we would use. And it was disappointing. It struck home to what we're all missing, as Tony touched on when he joined us last week. But Tony's got his top 10 that's coming on Thursday for the show. Made some great contacts, folks. We're going to be rolling out some great new products of the month that we meet while we're down there. Some innovative things. Guys, were you able to log on? I know you each had a busy week with activities.
I logged on here and there, but it was tough because work was busy, unfortunately.
I had a many of different projects getting ready for the start of the season that didn't have that opportunity, but I think I lived it through you with all the emails that I did receive. So, you know, like Alan said, guys, for those tuning in, we have a lot of cool ones that we did reach out to that we are in talks now with for future products of the month, possible partnerships even of the show. So please obviously stay tuned to all of our social media. I know we usually cover that at the end, but please stay tuned to all of our social media for all those updates. Cause obviously as soon as we have them, we're going to be sharing them. So that way you guys know where the best products to go to are. No, I did not get a chance. Unfortunately, just again, slammed with trying to get ready for the start of the season. So.
Understandable. Not a problem. So
I am wearing a golf hoodie cause it is cold. So, you know,
well,
if we want to get on that debate, we can go on that way.
I've got the vest on today. I'm wearing that because I'm getting ready after this to go out and shovel the beginning of 18 inches of snow. So,
we've had a lot here in Syracuse too. There's a good amount. It's just so cold today too. I hate it.
Welcome to the northern country.
Which ties in ideally to the other big thing. I'm just going to keep going, guys. The other big thing that happened for me this week is, I was, after being out of town, unfortunately, last week. This week, I was in town to attend the Golf Talk Live Winter Tournament Series at Play Around Golf in the Malvern location. And what was interesting about that was we had a special guest appearance, and I got to give a shout out. Son number two, Tyler, was able to make an appearance and he got called up out of the minor leagues, and I apologize, Todd Darlington, if you are listening to the show right now, which I know you probably are. I'm sorry, my friend, that we stuck you with Tyler. But the Winter Tournament Series, it's fun. It's happening. When you guys come down, we'll be probably in March. When you come down, we'll be right about at the tail end. You can attend the Tournament of Champions. I don't know if you saw any of the videos. If not, I will share a few of those, but I want to apologize to Steve Graves and Steve Graves Jr. for any, holes in the ceiling from off of his drivers.
I can only imagine after him not playing golf for an extended period of time, how enjoyable that was to watch. But definitely always a good one. We always get to see the videos. Obviously, we haven't gotten down there as ourselves yet just because of obviously being up here in New York. But definitely something I definitely want to get down to and see, because Play Around is obviously a great friend of the show. They have a great idea and great design with how they do it. A lot of courses and a lot of places up here are trying to match something like that just because obviously in the North, as everyone knows, it's hard to get out and play golf when it's got 18 inches of snow on the ground. So To have that simulator factor and have that fun atmosphere that everyone can go to and just enjoy themselves while they play is a great thing. So we thank Steve Graves over at Play Around for being able to host us, and definitely going to try to get down there before the end of the winter series, just so we can see it live for ourselves.
Christian, have you simulated golf before yourself?
Oh, numerous times. It's a lot of fun. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. We used to do it a lot in college for practice during the winter times. So it was good times. I mean, it's a lot of fun. I mean, you're not going to get a lot of the expectations that you want to have, I suppose, if you went to the dome and stuff like that. But it's a lot of fun to kick back, relax. And, the putting was the big thing, too. I like the putting aspect of it. And I know Tyler doesn't play a lot, but I bet he still has a better stroke than Andrew.
I'll say this right off the gate. I will 100% openly admit that I take the two putt automatically, or the randomization of putting, so that way I at least have a chance to make a few birdies here and there.
We do. Our league rules is we play the 6-foot automatic gimme in the winter tournament series. And we got some great prizes. Many of our product of the months that they make donations, we are able to provide those as prizes, all leading up to the March Tournament of Champions, which is huge. We opened the prize vault, and you got to be one of the top three teams to qualify for that. But that's going to be a great time. March 27th is when we're looking at that. And thank goodness there was no video footage of it. I actually stepped in and took a few swings myself.
Oh, ho, ho.
If it was as bad as the swings from the summertime, we might need to check the back walls and the side walls, because it would be as bad as Tyler. So we won't get into that. But
Alan's sitting center cut fairway every time.
No chance. No chance.
I'll tell you what. We're going to bring Todd. I'm going to get Todd on next week or next time around. We had a nice little interview with him. We'll be putting it up on our website. But I'll tell you what. We're going to have him report back. I was center cutting everything, boys. Pipeline, irrigation line, whatever way you want to term it. I was striping it.
I've never seen you swing either, and I already know you're doing that.
Is that because of worm burners that are like 10 feet off the ground that just barely get out to the fairway at this point, or was those actual?
Not at all.
Were those, as Phil would like to say, bombs?
Not at all. Like I've said all along, I can't help but hit it straight anymore. My swing speed has diminished so bad over the years. I can't turn on the ball, so I'm piping it.
He hits it long and straight. I bet you he's got calves the size of, like, they're probably huge. That's why he's nuking the ball right now. I love it.
Big calves.
It's all of 250 yards off the tee and dead straight.
That's what I hit my drive. Old man golf.
Hey, sometimes.
All right, well, we should probably get to the show instead of you ridiculing me, because that's unheard of ground. It's usually we're ridiculing Andrew. And when we're ridiculing Andrew, it's about practice. Simulator translates to practice, translates to Andrew's putting stroke, translates to the perfect practice putting mat.
Yeah, I like how you went there. I think that was like, what is that, Seven Shades of Bacon, Kevin Bacon, where you can somehow piece things together that way. So somehow we got to that point. But ladies and gentlemen, obviously, as you guys know, our good friends over at Perfect Practice, they have obviously been a big supporter of us. They were our December product of the month, which we've obviously had great success, which we obviously attribute to their great product. So it sits right behind me, right over there. Use it every single day that I can. Try those 5-footers, those, putts that we obviously need to make that are going to be the big ones on the golf course. And yes, although my putting stroke is not nearly as great as some of those, it is getting better, being able to use the lines that they have on the actual mats themselves and being able to use that training aid the proper way. So my putting stroke is getting better, whether they want to admit to it or not, it is. But it's only because of them. So make sure to use your code and use our code GTL15. Again, that's GTL15 for 15% off today on your product. They are just back in stock. We have some cool stuff hopefully coming in the works with actually them moving forward. Had a good conversation with them that we may have some newer products that they're releasing out soon, but stay tuned to that. And again, use our code GTL15 to get your 15% off.
So Christian, there was a golf tournament other than the Farmers, the Omega Dubai, and Paul Casey. What you got? Anything?
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, Paul, I mean, he's always just a well-known guy. Obviously, everybody loves when Paul's up at the top of the leaderboard. But, I mean, Paul played amazing. I mean, over at Dubai, that tournament is always fun to watch because you have a lot of the guys from America going over to play in that. Also guys from all around the world, too. So that leaderboard was pretty stacked if you think about it. I mean, he had a phenomenal, I think it was third day. Didn't he? I think he shot 64, I believe yesterday it was, or it was either a few days ago that he shot 64 that really kind of put him in contention. It was yesterday. It was round three. And he put himself right up there in the leaderboard. I mean, he shot 200 par today. So hats off to Paul. You know, I would love to see Paul win a major here moving forward, but you know, I don't know. I've always been a big fan of Paul Casey. The way he handles himself on and off the golf course, I think it's just phenomenal.
Andrew?
Well, I'll say this. I know there's a whole bunch of other golf balls out there. I obviously know that my support is obviously usually to the Titleist Pro V1ers of the world because that's what I play. So he carries a Titleist golf ball. That's probably why he won. Shameless plug there for the connection again, going Seven Shades of Kevin Bacon. Some, I guess this whole, you know, episode. So,
where the hell did you come up with that?
It's a real thing. Look it up. It's Seven Shades of Kevin Bacon is what I think is what it's called. It's
like, now.
Or seven degrees of Kevin Bacon. Like you piece it together. So I'm putting it together because I use the same ball he does. And I don't know. Anyway. No, he's a phenomenal.
Christian, did he just try to compare himself to Paul Casey?
I did.
Yep. I think he did. That's not even a comparison.
It is a comparison. I look like a PGA Tour pro. That's the only facet of my game that has the same resemblance. Other than that,
the only facet he has resemblance is you're wearing a hoodie like Rory was wearing. I mean,
yeah, you know.
And I play TP5s like Ricky Fowler, and I'm not anywhere remotely close.
Well, your game and Ricky's game may be pretty comparable right now.
I could probably beat Ricky right now. I'm not going to lie.
So, you know, overall,
Ricky, if you'd like to join us, we'd like to see that action.
I would be shaking on the first tee box if I saw Ricky Fowler. I'd probably faint.
Ricky would strike the ball center cut down the middle of the fairway.
I'd probably faint. In all seriousness, I'd shank it.
I'd love to. I'd love to get Ricky dressed up as one of the, when he did the commercial where he dressed up as the caddy. And have him come out there just as some walk-on, fourth in our group, and just demoralize you. And I think it'd be funny.
Wasn't his name like Richard Flower or something? Something silly like that.
Even if I play with Ricky, I probably wouldn't. I wouldn't even beat him on a hole. He would just beat me flat out every single. It would just be an amazing opportunity, but I would be shaking.
All right, so there, open invitation, Ricky. If you'd like to come join us, we'd love to tee it up.
Listen, you guys got this way off track right now. That's all I'm saying. So I'm going to get this back on the rails.
It sounds like Ricky's golf game right now, too.
Okay, again, we are getting this way off track, ladies and gentlemen. I apologize. I sometimes have to be the sensible one of this group since these two just have to go off the rails. So we're getting back on the rails. Paul Casey, phenomenal player. Definitely think he's capable of pulling out a major. He's obviously proved that he's able to go up against the big dudes any day of the game and any day of the week. But reality is that's not where we were obviously looking. It's not where we were obviously focusing our attention. So we need to be talking out at the farmers.
Well, I'm not done. I just want to throw in there. That's his 15th European Tour victory, 20 years apart. And he joins a really select group. I wish I had all the names. I know Tiger was one of the, I mean, kudos to Paul Casey. I mean, some great play this week. And, you know, in his pressy afterwards, he was talking about eyes on Augusta. So,
again, he always plays well. He's almost like the Mr. Consistent, you know, after Furyk came off of the, you know, consistently on the PGA Tour and going more on the Champions Tour now, right? Like Paul Casey's that other facet that like, he's just always there. Like he may not always win, but he's always there. And he's just a phenomenal golfer all around. No question about
even
it.
Even from like tee to green too, like his game sets up so well too for a course like Augusta, and that's coming up here like shortly. Just because like you don't have to hit it so far at Augusta to win. And I mean, his short game is always there. I mean, he has one of the best short games in the entire world. And no matter what tournament Paul Casey tees it up, there's a very good chance that he will be at the top of the leaderboard.
For sure. But I know we're going, we've kind of gone back and forth on this. Is your final point been made? Because we really have to get to the bigger one, which is Farmers Insurance and Patrick Reed. I mean, that's got to be at least the majority of the show.
So are you saying that Patrick Reed and the Farmers is dominating the sports golf news and not Paul Casey's win?
No, I'm just saying Paul Casey's win is a second thought at this point. Yes, because of everything that has happened with Patrick Reed.
All right. Well, I would agree with you. I just wanted to hear you defend your position.
Oh, okay. I'll defend it all the live long day.
Paul Casey's win over Patrick Reed's.
Paul Casey is a phenomenal player, phenomenal human being. He deserves the spotlight in the news. He deserves the spotlight on our show. But the big thing is the Patrick Reed incident. End of story.
Christian, I would be interested to hear what Alyssa Kazar from the Farmers, new lady golfer on on Instagram. I would love to hear what kind of scuttlebutt she's got from out there. But all right, Andrew, let's continue with the Patrick Reed conversation. Mm-hmm. I'm going to, before we get to the big controversy, which I'm going to take a different position on this. Let's just talk about how I think the luck of the draw benefited Patrick. He starts on the North course, fires his 64, and really never looked back. He just kind of held on in on the South during the second day when the conditions were insane. And then, you know, this is the thing about Torrey Pines. It is a U.S. – I mean, they're hosting the U.S. Open. It is a amazing, difficult to play. We talked about it last week. Winning score ended up being 13 under. Did he get 13 or 14?
But was at 14. But okay. It was 13 or 14. I mean, he was
14 under, 9 under in second. And we talked about it. Winning score would be anywhere from 6 to 21. Rough is already high. Can't even fathom what it's going to be like in June. And, I mean, Christian, he played well.
Yeah, he did play well. I mean, like at Torrey Pines, you got to hit the fairways first and foremost. I mean, like you can afford to miss, you know, the fairways at certain tournaments, but when it comes to Torrey Pines and that layout, you really can't be missing fairways. And Patrick hit most of the fairways this week. I don't know what the exact statistic was,
64.2.
I mean, that's an incredible stat to have over a course of a week. And I mean, that he played well and he didn't really make too many mistakes. I mean, the back nine, he had 8 pars and a birdie or 9 pars in a row. I mean, he was just playing solid golf. When he hit a bad shot, he got out of it.
Yeah,
and he played steady. He the fairway, he played smart, played consistent. And, you know, I mean, hats off to him. He played a phenomenal round.
I know that obviously this win is going to be tainted by the incident that obviously occurred. And like, that's the reality. There was another phenomenal play. I mean, there was phenomenal play all around. I mean, at Torrey Pines, if you shoot 9 under in most weeks, you're going to win the golf tournament, right?
All right. Well, let's dive. I'm going to interrupt you. Let's dive right now to the question.
Okay. Let's go.
Hole number 10, third round.
Yep.
He approaches he hits the ball left. Television clearly shows that it bounces. Everybody knows the story. And the PGA almost seemed like they did a little damage control because they put the entire video out to show that he, in fact, yes, he spoke to the volunteer. He walked up and said, did it bounce? And immediately goes down, checks it, and then calls over. Where I'm going to throw it, where I disagree with how he handled it. The situation is he picked the golf ball up, walked a couple of steps aside, sat the golf ball down, and waited for the tour official to get it there. And the tour official was there in moments. Christian, how do you think he handled it?
I, first and foremost,
Hold on, before you go, first off, let's get your stance on both of your fronts. Did he cheat then?
I do not believe he cheated.
Christian? I would say I'm not a big Patrick fan to begin with, but I do think that he has a reputation of sometimes not following the rules of golf. I think that's first and foremost. I think we can all agree on that one, but however, that's just my opinion. Secondly, I do think that he could handle the situation a little bit better. Whenever you hit a ball and you feel like it's embedded, you need to go over to the ball first. First, you need to identify the golf ball if it's even yours. If you can't identify it, you are allowed to mark it, and then you are allowed to pick the golf ball up, but the ball cannot move in your hand. If that's going to be your golf ball, then you're allowed to put that golf ball back in the spot if deemed it's not embedded. Patrick handled it poorly because he ended up taking the ball out. And like Alan said, he brought it back. That golf ball could have moved. That golf ball could have been mudded or whatever it was. But I don't think he handled it properly, personally. And I mean, right after he put the ball back, after the volunteer said it didn't bounce, he got a perfectly clean lie, ended up hitting a phenomenal shot out of there. I'm not saying that was going to ruin the tournament for him, but I mean, he could have handled it a little better, personally.
Andrew, do you think he cheated?
Yes.
Ooh.
Yes, I do. The rules of golf clearly state, as you, Christian, again, I won't go reiterating it because you just did, but you can't pick the ball up. End of story. I mean, like, there's
absolutely
one.
Absolutely can pick the
you,
ball
you can't
up.
Pick the ball up, place it someplace else.
He had no obligation to actually call. Here's the interesting thing. He had no obligation to call the rules official over whatsoever. He could have simply stated to his playing competitors, I feel that ball is embedded. They should have walked over and helped and reviewed it. Under no certain circumstance did he have. Now, we're
hold on a second. So in the rules of golf, you can pick the in the middle of play, you can pick the ball up and move it 5 feet and drop
rules of golf,
it.
I can mark the ball anywhere.
You can't mark the ball and pick it up before the rules official officially, like, you can identify it, but you can't pick the ball up and then drop the ball. It's back into play. That's a stroke penalty. You move the location of the ball. Am I wrong?
That's an interesting, that's one of the angles that I haven't heard of the conversation about.
I hate to say this, to further
muddy the situation.
That's the second point. If he drops the ball and the ball had mud on it, could the ball have ended up being wiped
off? Well, it was lift clean in place. So that part, no, to further muddy, no pun intended, the situation is a few groups ahead, Rory has the exact same situation occur.
Yeah, but Rory handled it differently than Patrick did, though.
He absolutely did. Rory handled it because Rory went up, identified it. He didn't see if it bounced or not. It clearly bounced also. Rory determined that the ball was embedded.
Yep.
Rory stated to his competitors, hey, it's embedded.
Yeah.
Only then did a tour official come over. So
here's where I stand on that. You have the tour officials that are at every hole, correct? Right. Mm-hmm. You have your playing partner that you have to mark it to. Either the player playing partner or the rules official has to officially deem that ball is embedded and agree with that. Yes or no?
Correct. If you've hit a ball in the left rough and you say it's embedded, Christian, it's under Christian's and my obligation to go.
Or the tour officials.
Or the tour official.
But Patrick never notified his complaint competitors on that.
In the video, he calls out to them. He also then calls the rules official.
He never called the players to come over and look at the ball. He just said that my ball is embedded.
To a degree, yes. He calls the rules.
So wait a minute.
My issue is not in the fact that if the ball's embedded. My issue is if any other player picks a ball up and even in lift clean in place drops it, that ball is back in play. That ball is that is a stroke penalty. He was never officially at that point a deemed.
Correct. Out of all the tournaments I've ever played in college, if it's not. You always have to call your playing competitors over first. If we're ever playing a lift clean in place rule or something, or not even a lift clean in place, if you're just playing a simple, you know, my ball is embedded and I think this ball is embedded, you always call your playing competitors over. This always happened with us in college too when we were playing at a golf tournament. I called my playing competitors over. I saw that there was a ball embedded, or if I went over to their ball and saw that their ball was embedded, then they ended up calling a coach over or a rules official that was on site for that tournament. And Patrick did not do that.
He was told that even though that the video shows that the ball had bounced, he was told that the ball had not. Yes or no?
Well, that raises the next, yes or no.
The woman tour or volunteer said
she did not see a bounce. But here's the interesting thing.
Hold on.
I'm gonna partially agree with you. Why would you ask that question as you're walking up?
Well, here's the thing. Patrick Reed has had
that's a point right there.
Patrick Reed has had, as Christian has said, Patrick Reed has had a continual over the top running of circumstances where he does not, and it's clearly evident, he does not follow the rules of golf. End of story. Okay.
There has been other players where things may have been done improperly.
There's other players. I.e. Phil Mickelson, the one that stands out the most is Phil when he literally just ran across the green at Shinnecock and batted the ball back because he'd rather take the stroke penalty. Where I have an issue where I think he fundamentally cheated, okay, is he picked the ball up before it was deemed droppable. Okay. If you are both correct.
But the ball was marked at that point.
The ball was only marked at the spot, but he was never given
the ball was marked. You mark a ball. He marked the ball.
He marked the ball after he marked the ball before the rules official had come over. Okay.
I understand that. If you walk up ball's laying on the fringe and you walk up and you look again, same thing. Maybe you're playing lift clean in place through the green or whatever the case may be. And you mark the ball and you pick the ball up at that point. Is the ball marked?
The ball was not marked. He marked.
I'm asking you would the ball be marked at that point? You would know the place where the ball is to be played from.
Correct.
Okay.
So if it's an elite lift clean in place situation, okay. Here, this is where I have the fundamental issue. If he is, in theory, able to lift clean and place said ball because of embedded ball, why not wait until the rules official gets over there, officially deems it, or her playing partner officially deems the ball. If they're able to place it, once he places that ball, in theory, when the ball was visually right behind his right foot, it should have been back in play in that location. Yes or no?
Wrong.
Why wrong?
Because he had already marked it.
But it doesn't allow him to just drop the ball anywhere and leave it where he wanted.
No, he would have had to mark it back at the place that he marked it.
He marked the ball a foot, like 5 feet over to the left. He then placed the ball before.
I understand. He set the ball aside. He referenced that.
And I think that's the biggest point is that was the biggest issue here was that he marked the ball without anybody being around. And two, he also brought the ball back a couple feet.
In my mind, there was no rules official that allowed him that said, hey, look, I need to check the bit and I'm going to allow you to mark the ball. There's no with him.
But if you are using to compare you in look. I
1,000% believe he cheated because that rough is thick enough and you can't deny it. Like you could drop a ball and it gets disappeared in. We've all seen the video of Wingfoot. If he's able with his reputation to literally pick sand up.
There's the key word.
If his reputation is to bend down without getting the go ahead. Okay. What's to say that with that soft grass that he did not push that indentation down?
There's nothing to say because you can't say that.
But again, moving forward, though, not that this would have affected the tournament because he ended up winning by 5 strokes. However, if this happened in a situation where he ended up winning the tournament by 1 stroke or he ended up going or whatever, or if this continues to happen moving forward, if this happens in a major, he ends up winning it or something in regards to that. But again, it goes back to the question here. Will Patrick continue to do this moving forward? Every tournament he tees it up in, will someone find something flawed in his game?
I think this is the third time that a rules issue has occurred with him.
It may be more than that, but I think that inherently he is viewed with a different lens than everybody else because of prior things. Correct. His reputation. And again, if you want to use by comparison, he and Rory basically did the same thing. The only difference was, and I completely agree you should have handled this differently, is he actually physically picked the ball up. He marked it, but he physically picked the ball up before the rules official got there. There's no evidence on either case that at least that I saw that his playing competitors came over to check. But here's the other one. Patrick makes par, but Rory makes bogey. Does that make it a little more acceptable?
It makes it a little more, but at the same token though, I read something online today after this happened was saying that why would Patrick, if the lie was actually truly embedded and this was not an issue, why would Patrick pick the ball up in the first place before the rules official came over? I read something online saying that if the ball was truly embedded, he should not have touched it in the first place. He should have just waited for a rules official or a playing competitor to come over and look at the ball itself. Because if the ball was truly embedded, he wouldn't have moved it in the first place.
And that's a valid point. And that's where I have a fundamental issue with that. Yeah.
That shows somebody in, like myself, that shows me that he's currently hiding something.
All on
you are hiding. You are, in my mind, you are high. If you are truthfully honest with yourself and saying that ball is embedded, it is clearly evident that that ball is embedded. There is no issue with leaving that. And that's where I have a fundamental agreement with that. Like,
two, this goes to show you why Patrick doesn't play well in a US Open or an Open, because he can't play well in a tournament that's set up tough. Torrey Pines wasn't set up that tough this week because he shot 14 under for him. But however, when he goes to a US Open or when he goes to an Open, you never see Patrick up at the top of the leaderboards really, because he hits the ball in the rough. He's going to be a little, you know, I don't even know the word to use for that, but he's going to complain about it because he can't get out of it. So if that movement of that ball was even an inch, right, that right there was just a psychological difference to him that he could finally get to the green if he did move it. Again, we don't see the video evidence of it.
I was just about to say, the people that are out there, you guys, is what there is a lot of circumstantial evidence. The asking the volunteer when you're walking up, I found that unusual. I don't disagree. He handled it completely poorly.
He handled it terribly.
He should know his reputation. I don't think he gives a darn about his reputation, but he should know.
I don't think he does either.
No one has direct evidence because he moved the golf ball. No one has direct evidence.
Which is the point. Hypothetically speaking, though, if they did have direct evidence, then what happens? Say they found out that he cheated. What's the PGA Tour going to do about it? Are they going to?
He met with the PGA Tour at length at the conclusion of his round.
If they ended up deeming that was a fault, one, I'm assuming he'd be withdrawn from the tournament. Maybe.
No, they would have assessed. He would have been.
You know what I mean?
He could have been assessed a penalty post round.
But this wasn't the first time that he's ever cheated in a tournament.
No, the incident at the Heroes where in the bunker was, again, that was it was right caught on camera. So
yeah,
direct evidence.
You don't ask. We've all played in tournament golf. Okay, this is where I have the fundamental issue. Never have I asked a volunteer, "Hey, is the ball embedded?" I'd ask where the ball may. Hey, did you have an eye on where the ball is? That's a valid question. Walking up to the ball, if it's in that thick of rough, but I've never asked somebody where is the ball and is it embedded.
For those people that are pointing to that, it's almost to see his psychology to, you know, already his thought pattern as he's approaching it. Oh, this ball is going to be embedded. You watch.
So the next point would be, if there's enough, you can't, in my mind, you can't sit there and say, okay, I'm looking at the ball, I mark it the whole nine yards. You can't sit there and tell me time and time again that that's not fundamentally, without having the actual rules official there at that present moment and everything else entirely to officially deem it. That's where I find that is an issue.
All I'm saying is, based on what I can specifically see, I do not believe that he cheated.
And I will go. I will go a step further.
Poorly, yes.
I will go a step further and agree with Christian in that we've all, because we go out on a Saturday morning, we play with the group, and you do the rollovers and the fairways, you fluff your lie a little bit because it doesn't really matter. There is a psychological advantage of knowing your ball's in a better lie than a worse lie. Yes or no?
Yeah.
So he makes par. We see Rory a hole or two holes ahead, and he makes
bogey. Much closer to the pin, by the way, too.
Yeah, much closer to the pin in a much easier shot, in my opinion. And there's a difference in
like I'm saying, though, if he makes bogey there, though, it's not going to make a huge difference to his round. You know what I mean? But again, though, he did win off.
But could it have? Because make bogey, yeah, what's to say
you don't shoot it, Andrew? I mean,
that's the point. This has now happened with the Heroes. This has now happened here. This is now, I think there's a third one, if I'm not mistaken, at least.
At least.
There's going to be rules officials now, I feel like, following his group, no matter if it's in a major or whether it's at the Farmers Insurance Open next year or something like that, or the next tournament he tees it up at. Because no matter what happens now, everyone is going to be focusing on his group because they're now going to need to watch him moving forward. Now, granted, I don't know what the player side of things are. Some players may think he cheated. Some players may think he's not. But the players who think he cheated, they may watch him more moving forward.
It was absolutely evident watching Twitter, absolutely evident watching the telecast today.
Yeah.
The opinions of those people, those ones that have, especially those that have, I give credence to those that have played, been between the ropes.
Yes.
I don't care. I don't care about, you know, guys like us that are reporting on some on topic and they just, they have an opinion. I'm, you know, the Nick Faldos of the world that truly, yeah, I think
it up and been in that situation. Definitely, obviously those people, again, we're making conversation of this, ladies and gentlemen, because this is news. This is something we have to cover. My fundamental issue with it is I've been in competitive golf. We've all been in competitive golf. I've never handled the situation that way. I've overtly called people over and waited to call people over to make sure that I handle it properly.
You know, I actually call the kid out in college on the same type of ruling where we were at some tournament, kid hits a ball left and he ended up hitting it in the rough. We never saw it from the tee box, but luckily a volunteer up at the tournament, you know, he did see it, right? And the person said, yeah, this ball clearly it did not bounce, right? So we didn't know where it was. But when I walked over to his ball, the ball was clearly not embedded, in my personal opinion. However, my playing competitor thought that the ball was embedded. So the kid ended up moving the ball, getting a clean line, making birdie.
Hold on 1 second. I have even better one. And this confirms again, the aspect of reputation has a big thing here in this argument, because reputation determines how do you feel about a player when you're playing either with them or against them. We had a kid, similar situation. It was apparent because obviously we didn't have volunteers at this point, because it was just a smaller tournament. We had a parent watch a ball go into the forest of forests, never see it land. This kid magically finds the ball when nobody else is around, gets it out of the trees in one shot, miraculously ends up shooting, I think it was like 76 day one. Every single team in competition was like, really? And there was multiple times of this happening. The following day, they purposely set up a rules person to be around him. The kid shoots 93. There's a big discrepancy between 78 and 93.
I lost a collegiate tournament because I was in a threesome. Two of the guys in the group was the guy three jacked a hole, and I ended up what should have been beating him by one. And I take it back. We would have tied. He said he put himself down for a two putt. Long story short, is the other kid attested to it. So I've also been in a U.S. Open qualifier before where a guy intentionally mismarked his golf ball every time we called him out on it. And this is where I think the other guys in the group failed Patrick and they failed the field. We in my situation many, many years ago, we called the guy on it. We said something about it. He still won't stop. So we finally alerted a rules official at that point because it was our responsibility as a fellow competitor to not only ourselves, but the entire field to supervise their possible infractions. Yeah. I think based on the evidence that we saw, this is what I'll reaffirm my reasoning, based on the evidence that we saw, we cannot hold him guilty of cheating. I do think that he did he handled the whole situation poorly.
He definitely did. And again, my last point on this really quick is that, you know, again, hats off to him. He won the tournament. Great job. Great performance. The one thing that Patrick really doesn't care about is anybody's opinion, because he's going to continue to go do his thing, go do his business. I just hope that he doesn't continue to do this because again, he's built a reputation for himself on tour, known as a cheater, someone who doesn't follow the rules of golf.
Let me give you a couple of Patrick Reed's stats here, and then I want to dive into something else. Patrick Reed's, some of his victories, I think he's up to 9 now. Some of them include Bethpage, Doral, Augusta, pretty good track, and now Torrey, pretty good tracks. And he joins Tiger, Phil, and Bubba is one of the now only four players that have won a major, a WGC, and at Torrey Pines.
Is Patrick one of the best players in the world? No, I don't think so, personally. That's just my opinion.
I think he wants, obviously, he wants to be.
But if I'm talking top 10 in the world, no, no. I wouldn't take
it. We want to talk about top players. Let's.
Well, hold on a second. I think the big thing with Patrick Reed is Patrick Reed just suddenly gets hot out of nowhere. Oh, yeah. He gets hot, he wins a tournament, then you don't hear about him until he wins another tournament.
Correct.
I think it was yourself. I think you were the one. I don't know, this is probably where we're going, but I mean, then you look at guys that are really top players, i.e., he finished tied for second, but Tony Finau. That dude has been a money-making machine with top tens.
But he can't break through.
I mean, it begs the question again. Oh, and this is where I have like I said, I had the fundamental issue of him, and I feel like he did cheat. It takes away from guys like Tony, who is a phenomenal guy, has never really had an issue. And there is a complete mental change when you make a bogey in a tournament. You can say that there isn't at that level because those guys are that good. When it's a one-shot advantage versus a two-shot advantage or even a three, there's a lot more confidence in your game. And I feel like Tony and the rest of those guys that were at minus nine had a gigantic disservice. There was a lot of guys. Obviously, mine, I believe, ended up missing the cut just because he played so bad.
Who was that again?
Yeah, Matthew Wolf. However, I will say Adam Scott.
He didn't miss the cut.
No, he didn't miss the cut. He withdrew because he had something wrong with his wrist. He had like a wrist injury.
Oh, that's it wasn't bother- the fact that's he been was seven over him. After like five?
He was seven over through 10 early. I think after the conclusion of round one, he actually ended up telling people what was really wrong with him. He actually ended up having something wrong with his wrist. Obviously, we hope that he has a speedy recovery on that first and foremost, and we hope we can see him again on the golf course soon.
I will tell you,
we're talking picks here. I picked Xander Schauffele, and my outsider was Victor Hovland.
Yeah, but he didn't win. I was getting nervous for a few minutes, but he didn't win. And that doesn't get you any points.
Tied for second. I'm just saying, though, both came tied for second.
I'm a big Victor fan. You know that, but that didn't get you any points.
I'm just going to tell you right now, he didn't finish tied for second, but you guys looked at me sideways like I had two.
Adam Scott played well.
Or I was picking Ricky Fowler to beat Tiger Woods in the Masters. But Adam Scott finished in the top 10. I think, again, that man plays well at a Torrey. We've obviously made our talks about, you know, who could be the winners of the majors. Don't be surprised if that man comes out at the U.S. Open.
No, you had Colin to win too, remember?
I did have Colin, but I also will say, like, look at who's playing well. And look at who played well at a field and at a venue that they're going to be playing later this year. I mean,
Christian, let me throw this one at you. Any thoughts on Jordan and Brooks this week? Because we've been focusing on them a lot.
I mean, Jordan was playing somewhat well the first few rounds, but then it kind of tailed off a little bit. Brooks, I don't know what's going on with Brooks personally. There's something clearly going on with his game right now. He's not playing well. It's his third consecutive missed cut. Again, is that something to be
first time in his career?
Yep. Is that something to be concerned about? I would be a little bit concerned about it because Augusta's right around the corner. However, it's Brooks Koepka at the end of the day. Brooks performs best when he is in a major championship. Again, it could take one tournament here or there to really kickstart what's going on, but we'll have to wait and see. I think there was a lot of positives for Jordan this week, kind of getting back in the group of things. And I think that's going to be a long road with him and Butch. Again, I don't know.
Andrew, on that note, on the Brooks thing, did you see what I saw, which his misses were right? But here's the thing. He's taken one side. If that's the case, he's eliminated one side of the golf course, that's the beginning of progress.
Yeah. So my takeaway is Brooks has some work to do. We still have to realize, and we can all look at this from somebody outside the ropes, because again, we're not those guys that are playing on a weekly basis. So our opinions only mean so much, let's be honest. But Brooks, to me, I think the injury is affecting him longer than we expect, and especially more than I expected. But you are right. He at least has narrowed the miss to one side of the field, that if he can at least understand that and play.
You sound like Legend of Bagger Vance.
Hey, listen, don't listen.
I'd say, Mr. Yuna, you got to see the field.
If he's able to take out the one side of the game, right, it obviously – there you go, and it's not the field. It allows him to be more confident over the golf ball, right? Like, confidence is such a big thing. That's why we say Jordan's the biggest – has the biggest struggle, because he doesn't have any confidence. We've also heard he's made it very well known. The majors are what he cares about. He don't care about week in, week out tournaments. He cares about majors, and he cares about major titles and securing as many of them as possible. So, you know, I think Brooks will be fine. He'll need some more work, some more tune up leading up to Augusta, but I'm not too overtly worried at this point.
All right. Well, so we leave Torrey Pines, a great golf course, great venue. And we're going to take a word briefly from another great venue, our sponsor, Bella Vista.
When it comes to great golf in Philadelphia's western suburbs, the conversation always turns to Bella Vista Golf Course. This must-play facility, designed by Jim Blaukovich, is known for its great layout and even greater conditions. It's also home to La Masseria, an elegant facility for weddings, banquets, and private parties. For more information, go to bellavistagc.com. And don't forget their sister courses, Mainland Golf Course in Harleysville and Morgan Hill in Easton.
All right, and we're back, Christian. Next week, we're here. I can't believe how fast we got to the 18th green, but show wrap up, looking ahead. I know we do this on our Thursday show normally, but I always love this tournament. The waste management is this week. It's time for the 16th hole. I mean, 16th, what's your thoughts?
Talk about the 17th, too.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just such a fun tournament to watch. It's just always a shoot house because people always end up coming down the stretch. It's just like, it's so much fun, so much energy coming down. I mean, you could literally go 4 under in the last 3 holes if you chose to. Like, I mean, super kind of a delicate, easy par 3 a little bit if you hit a good shot, drivable par 4, 17th. 18's a monster hole, but you got par 5, 15, like, is down there too. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I will say this ahead of time, Ricky's not my pick, but I think this will be Ricky's best showing of the year so far. And I do see Ricky playing extremely well here. He loves that golf course, loves the layout, loves the energy. And I know it's going to be different with COVID this year. But again, I could see him being up there. I could see Phil being up there and many more people. So
you just took our entire Thursday show away from us, man.
We're going to have to, I got to reprogram that now.
I think if we were going to talk about a tournament other than a major to go to take a road trip to, it's got to be that. So looking forward to Thursday. Closing thoughts real quick for myself. I'll let you guys finish it up for the day. But closing thoughts are this. I think the reputation of Patrick Reed is going to continue to be an issue until otherwise proven, you know, innocent, basically. For everyone that has already been following us, as I say every single show, thank you for your support. We obviously greatly appreciate it. Please stay tuned. As we were saying at the beginning of the show, we have a lot of great content and a lot of great things, hopefully in the works, based on some conversation that we are having. So looking forward to that. But other than that, though, guys, as always, we can't be anywhere without you guys. So if you guys do have friends, family, just happen to stumble upon us for this one show, let us know how you guys like the show. We're always looking for great feedback from it, so that way we can make it better. Always trying to find new people. So if you do have those friends or family that are looking to get into the game, let them know about our show so that we can continue to help them, just like we're hopefully helping you guys. And we'll see you guys on Thursday for our look ahead to the waste management.
And my final thoughts before we shut it down and put the pin in is one last shout out to our good friends at Greenkeepers Inc. and the Bottle Tea. I showed everyone at the Winter Tournament Series yesterday. They loved it. Again, that is ready for purchase and distribution sometime in mid-February. I've used it. It's fun. It's a different way to practice and teaches you the inside swing path and an upward swing on the driver. So that obviously means we're in February. We're recording this on January 31. You'll be hearing this on February 1. And our February product of the month, you're going to hear it here first, which is the High Heat, the longest and most forgiving fairway woods and hybrids. It's got the Turf Glider sole, and we'll be talking actually with Tony Leodora a little bit more, I'm sure, about that in the coming weeks. So High Heat, product of the month for February. As Andrew said, follow us on social media. And Christian, hit it long and straight because
it beats short and crooked.
Conveniently located in Harleysville, just off the Lansdale exit of the Northeast Extension, the player-friendly Mainland Golf Course offers excellent playing conditions at affordable rates. It is a perfect host site for your next corporate outing. And after each round, the golf experience at Mainland Golf Course can be enhanced by visiting the Mainland Grill, serving lunch and dinner daily. For more information, go to mainlandgolf.com. And don't forget their sister courses, Bella Vista Golf Course in Gilbertsville and Morgan Hill in Easton.